Welcome to Torah Temecha Parsha with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Chana Meir, and today we'll be studying Parshas VaYigash. This Parsha is 106 psukim long, and it's from Perek Mem Dalet to Mem Zayin, but the beginning and the end both start in the middle of a Perek. So, in our first Aliyah, we have the epic confrontation between Yehuda and Yosef. Yosef has just threatened to throw Binyamin, the youngest brother, in jail. Yehuda, who had sworn to Yaakov that he would look after Binyamin, now has to defend him because he's the one who said, if anything happens to Binyamin, I will lose my olam haba. So he stands up to challenge Yosef, and it says, Vayigash Yehuda. He approaches him. He starts off saying, Be Adoni. He talks with humility, but really he's asking permission to speak freely because he's actually going to throw some harsh accusations at Yosef. And he says to him, look, this whole thing is a setup. Let's go back to the beginning. We came here with good intentions. You asked us questions. We answered them honestly. You said, do you have a father or a brother? And we said, yes, we have an elderly father at home. We left him together with our youngest brother who was born to him in his old age. This brother of the old age had another brother who died. And our father is very, very protective of the remaining brother. You asked us to bring this brother down, and we said we can't because if anything happens to him, it'll kill our father. But then you insisted. You said you're not going to give us any more grain unless we bring down this brother. So we went back to our father, who obviously refused, and only when we were starving and we had no food left did our father agree. But the only way he agreed, Yehuda explains, is I said I will be the guarantor. If anything happens to my brother, my life will be in his place. This is why I'm the one who is challenging you. Now, the Aliyah ends before he finishes his speech, so I just want to stop a second and make a few comments. This word Vayigash, the Midrash tells us in Bereishis Rabbah that there are two ways to understand. Vayigash could either mean to approach for war or for peace. And sometimes in life, when you want to make peace with somebody, you first have to have that confrontation and get off your chest everything that's really bothering you and speak it out till you can get to the heart of the matter, and then you can have peace. There's a book called Siblings Without Rivalry. It's actually a classic, how to help your children live together so you can too. And they have a saying, not till the bad feelings come out can the good ones come in. And this is what's happening. Yehuda and Yosef, each the representatives of Rachel and Leah, who carrying with them this generational trauma of this split between the sisters, have to have it out between them so that they can make peace. In the next Aliyah, Yehuda finishes his speech. And he says, Ki ech e'ele el avi, how can I go up to my father, v'hanar eneno iti, and the boy is not with me. So Yosef sends out all the Egyptians out of the room because he does not want to embarrass his brothers when he confronts them in front of the Egyptians. And he says, well, you say you can't go back to your father if the boy isn't with him. Well, ani Yosef, ha'od avichai, you saw me, is my father still alive? You know, and the brothers didn't know what to say. They didn't know what to do with themselves. And the Gemara tells us, based on this, the Gemara in Chagiga says, in the name of Rabbi Eliezer, if the sons of Yaakov couldn't answer Yosef when he said, Ha'od Avichai, how are we going to answer Hashem after 120? Why couldn't they answer? Because essentially what Yosef did was he showed a mirror to them. Your actions and your words don't match. And what's going to happen to us after 120 is Hashem is going to show us all the things that we say, all the values we claim to hold, and then he's going to compare it to our actual actions, and that contradiction, that hypocrisy, is what's going to show ourselves up, and that's why we're going to have nothing to say. But you heard this here from me, so we've still got time to fix that. Yosef talks to the brothers in a calming way, and he wants to make peace with them, and he says, don't be upset by what happened. Even though you made choices that weren't good, ultimately it was part of a bigger picture. It was Hashem's plan to put me here so I could be in a position to look after you and help you in your time of need. Yosef asks his brothers two times if his father is still alive. Why does he keep harping on that fact? According to the Torah Tamima, Yosef wants to make sure that Yaakov is indeed alive. He's worried that the brothers, in trying to get this Egyptian ruler who they didn't know, in order to get his pity, they were talking about their father as if he was alive, but maybe he wasn't. So he just wanted to affirm that his father actually is alive. Once he knows for sure his father's alive, now we can go into the next Aliyah. Just to make a point about the third Aliyah, In some Chumashim, there's a slightly different break between the third, fourth, and fifth Aliyah. So I'm going according to Allah Torah, but you might have a slightly different break in your Chumash. It's just different traditions. But according to my version of the third Aliyah, Yosef continues to reassure his brothers and he urges him to quickly go back to Yaakov and bring him down to Egypt, and he will let them stay in Goshen, which is close to where he lives, so he can look after them. Yosef and Binyamin hug each other. The news of Yosef's reunion with his brothers spreads, and Paro is very happy about this. He's thinking, if Yosef, who's helped me so much, has a family with brothers, that means even more people who can come. This is wonderful. And he invites them all to come to live in Egypt. Now, why does Yosef want to bring his elderly father all the way to Egypt? So here we see the catch-22 of the Galus Jew. We have a Jew who wants to serve the country that he lives in, but he's always suspected of dual loyalty. So if Yosef is going to be sending food to his family in Israel, people are going to say, oh, you're Israel first. So he wants to bring his family to Egypt so he can look after them without raising any eyebrows. But on the other hand, he doesn't want his family living amongst Egyptian culture where they'll be influenced negatively. That's why he has them living in Goshen, which is close enough for him to look after them, but not in the heart of Egypt where they might assimilate and be influenced. In the fourth Aliyah, Paro gives Yosef wagons to give to his brothers so they can bring Yaakov down. And Yosef also gives them provisions, changes of clothing, and he gives Binyamin extra. He gives him 300 pieces of silver and 5 changes of clothing. There are many midrashim why he singles out Binyamin with this. Some people say that the value of the extra articles was less than the single articles he gave his brothers. Other people say he's trying to, again, reaffirm that the brothers have done teshuva when he gives Binyamin this special treatment and they don't resent him for it. I heard a very nice idea by Rabbi Yaakov Trump, that sometimes in life it looks like somebody else has more than us, but ultimately if you look at the core value, we all get exactly what we need. We all actually get the same. It just looks different. So I might have 5 garments, but they're of lesser value than your one garment. So we should just focus on what we have and not compare it to anybody else. Yosef warns them not to argue on the way, but just to go straight back home to Yaakov. He's worried that they're going to start blaming each other, whose fault it is, and then they're not going to get home in time. The brothers now have to break the news to Yaakov. So the pasuk says, "Vayagidu lo lemor." It's almost like you can imagine how they're slowly breaking the news to him, and Yaakov can't believe it. It says, "Vayipag libo." Either he fainted, or his heart became like ice, like it couldn't penetrate inside of him. But eventually, he is convinced, especially when he sees the wagons, and we'll talk about the significance of the wagons in a minute. And it says, "Vatechi ruach Yaakov avihem." His spirit was revived for the first time in 22 years. Ruach HaKodesh returned to him, and he realized they were telling the truth, because Ruach HaKodesh can only be on a person who is joyful. And since Yaakov was mourning for so long, the spirit of Hashem wasn't with him. Now, when he hears this wonderful news, the spirit of Hashem returns to him. What was it about the Agalot that made Yaakov believe his sons? The last piece of Torah that Yosef and Yaakov had learned together was the halacha of Egla Arufa. And Agala is a play on words. Why is this relevant in any way? The laws of Egla Arufa are, if somebody is found murdered between two cities, the closest city is responsible, because you're supposed to accompany people on their journey. You're not supposed to leave them by themselves. And Yosef was sending a message to his father. You accompanied me when you sent me on the mission. Don't feel bad that if you would have just accompanied me further, nothing would have happened. Obviously, this is from Hashem. There was a bigger picture. And I'm sending you the Agalot, number one, to let you know that I haven't forgotten my Torah learning. But number two, to reassure you, this wasn't a case of somebody who was neglected. It was all a plan from Hashem. There's also a midrash that part of the way that Yaakov's sons revealed the truth to Yaakov was Serach bat Asher, the granddaughter of Yaakov, was very musically talented. So she played on an instrument singing, "My uncle's still alive, my uncle's in Egypt." And this helped Yaakov to accept the news. In the fifth Aliyah, Yaakov says, "Enough, I must see Yosef before I die." And he gathers his whole family and they begin their descent to Egypt. They stop on the way in Beersheba, and Yaakov offers karbanos to Hashem. Hashem appears to him in a dream and he says, "Yaakov, Yaakov, Whenever there's a repetition of a name, it's a sign of love. He promises him that he'll be with him in Egypt, and he will bring him back up. He will be buried in Eretz Israel, but Yosef will be at his side to cover his eyes, which means either he will look after him for the rest of his life, or he will make sure that his needs are taken care of after he dies. The end of the Aliyah lists Yaakov's 70 descendants. 66 he brings with him, and Yosef, his wife, and two sons are waiting in Egypt. If you count the names of the people, it's actually 69, it's not 70. And Rashi explains that Yocheved, the daughter of Levi, is born as they enter the gates of Egypt. And the deeper meaning of this is, even as the Jews begin their galut, their descent to Egypt, which is going to land in a very long period of enslavement, the geula, the seeds of redemption, are already planted, because Yocheved's son, Moshe, will be the one who will take them out of Egypt. So even as they enter galut, the Redeemer, or the seeds of the Redeemer, are already being planted. In the sixth Aliyah, Yehuda is sent ahead to prepare. Rashi explains that Yaakov had instructed him, Laharot lefanav, and the word hara'ah is to teach Torah. Yehuda was sent ahead to start yeshivot for them to learn Torah. Yosef meets Yaakov and he falls on his shoulders. Yosef is crying and Yaakov is saying Shema. Yaakov says, now I can die, I have seen your face. Yosef brings his father and his brothers to Paro, and he tells his brothers to tell Paro that they are shepherds, because the Egyptians have a strong dislike of shepherds because they worship sheep, and this again would ensure that they could live separately and not be assimilated. When Paro sees Yaakov, he asks him how old he is, and Yaakov answers, Yemei shnei megurai, shloshim u'me'a shana ma'at v'ra'im hayu. And the days of my sojourning are 130 years, few and evil. And we learn from here that for every word of complaining that Yaakov said, he lost a year of his life. He should have lived 180 years like Yitzchak, and he lived only 147, which means he lost 33 years. But if you count the words of his complaint, to get 33, you have to include Paro's question. So from here, Rav Chaim Shmuel Levitz says that Yaakov was punished not only for complaining, but for looking in a way that Paro even asked that question. And he teaches from here that there are two ways to live your life. You can either focus on your tzaros, or you can focus on what you have, because we all have a mixture of good things and bad things. When we focus on gratitude, what we have, this lengthens our lives. When we focus on what we don't have and our suffering, this causes us to actually lose years of our life. Yaakov blesses Paro, and according to some opinions, once Yaakov blessed Paro, the Nile overflowed and the famine ends. In the seventh Aliyah, Yosef settles his family in Ramses, which is a portion of Goshen, and he takes care of his family. And then it finishes off with how Yosef collected money from the Egyptians. We're not sure if this is in order, or if it's backtracking. Now that we see Yosef reunited, we go back to the original story. So the first year, the Egyptians gave all of their money. The second year, they gave all of their cattle. The third year, they went to Yosef, they said, we've got nothing left. So Yosef bought all of their land. He allowed them to stay on their land, and they could work it and just give a fifth of their possessions back to Yosef. And Yosef made very clear to the people that the money and the animals and the land was all going to Paro, not to Yosef personally. And because he wasn't personally being enriched, the people were very grateful to Yosef for helping them to survive. And the only people who didn't have to pay tax were the priests. And it finishes off that Yosef and his entire family of brothers and nieces, nephews, they flourish and increase. So I just want to finish off with a thought about this parasha, because we said before that Vayeshev, Miketz, and Vayigash are one big unit. We looked at this whole saga of Yosef and his family, and we discussed how it's a four-part drama. The first is the family in Canaan, built on the fault lines of the rivalry between Rachel and Leah, the fallout between Yosef, the son of Rachel, and the rest of the brothers, and then Yosef has to work on himself. The brothers have to work on themselves, and in our parasha, they can finally come together. And what is it that allows them to finally come together? So we said last parasha how Yosef established a test where his brother, who's also a son of Rachel, is going to go down the same way he went down to Egypt. And if the sons of Leah would be prepared to step up for him, he would know that they have done proper teshuva. What was the actual catalyst that helped Yehuda to do teshuva and showed Yosef that the brothers had done proper teshuva? So if you look at the speech, it's actually very painful. Yehuda, the son of Leah, is reporting his father's words, and he says, in the name of his father, Atem yadatem, you know, kishnaim yaldali ishti, my wife, my true wife, my only wife who counts, Rachel, gave me two sons. For Yehuda, who's actually Leah's son, to acknowledge that Yaakov always loved Rachel, and the sons who mattered most were Rachel's sons, and still be able to stand up for Binyamin and say, even though this wasn't my mother, and even though this isn't my full brother, I'm prepared to stand up for him and take his place as a slave. Why? Because how can I go back and see my father in so much pain? When Yehuda was able to focus on his father's pain instead of his own resentment, this allowed him to step up and defend the son of Rachel. And when Yosef could see that the sons of Leah were able to protect the sons of Rachel, he was able to forgive them. If we look over the last few parashiyot, there's a lot of hurt in Yaakov's family, and it's really no one's fault. Yaakov wanted to marry Rachel. It's not his fault he was stuck with Leah, and it's not Leah's fault what happened, but there's still a lot of pain going around, and it's very easy for everyone to just focus on the hurt. But when they can all step back and say, you know what? The one who ultimately suffered the most and never ever asked for this was Yaakov. If we can all just out of love of our father, put aside our own pain and focus on him, then we can live in peace. Right? This gives us a way to transcend the mistakes and the crimes of the past. Parashat Vayigash is a bittersweet parasha, because on the one hand you have the emotional reunion between Yaakov and Yosef after so many years, and the brothers make peace and everyone's together again. But on the other hand, it's the beginning of the Galut. The Jewish people go down to Egypt, and we know they're going to be there for 210 years, and everything's going to get progressively more painful and difficult. And here we are, thousands of years later. We've seen a lot. We're on the other side of history, and we're still in Galut. And we ask ourselves, how do we get out? How do we reverse our fortunes? How do we get back to Eretz Israel in a way that we are unified? How do we get back to our Father in heaven? And the answer is exactly what Yehuda said to Yosef. Ech e'eleh l'avi, how can I go up to my father? V'anar enenu iti. And my youth, our children, our brethren are not with us. I really, really feel in today's day and time, when we've had so much pain and so much suffering, the real question we have to ask ourselves is, who's not with us? Who do we need to reach out to? Yes, we can focus on finger pointing and blaming, and these people aren't good enough and it's these people's fault. But ultimately, we're all children of the same father. Everyone in Klal Yisrael, we all stood at Har Sinai together. We all made the same commitment to one another. We're all brothers and sisters. And if we really want to get back home, if we want the Geula and Yeshua and enough of the pain and the suffering, we have to unite. We have to do what Yehuda and Yosef did. And instead of focusing on our own pain, focus on our father's pain. And finally, once and for all, make peace. And with that, Be'ezrat Hashem, you should have a beautiful week. And ultimately, the final Geula. Thank you.